Have you ever applied a skincare product to your body and wondered what kind of crazy chemicals are in it, and then read the ingredient list and realized you can't even pronounce half the ingredients? Your skin is the largest organ of your body, and what you put on it becomes part of you. In fact, if your skincare has chemicals you wouldn't eat, you probably ought not rub it all over your body. This is why in our house we use Tallow Skin Solutions Body Butter. It is made with all natural ingredients that are safe enough to eat and offer your skin the nutrients it can thrive on. The tallow is sourced from a family farm in Georgia, which practices sustainable regenerative agriculture. The body butter also has organic coconut oil, organic cocoa butter, and organic essential oils. The texture is silky and luxurious as it is whipped to the perfect consistency. Enjoy one of the five different scents. My personal favorite is creamsicle, which blends vanilla and orange and smells delicious. If you've never used a natural product like this, you are in for a treat. Go to tallowskinsolutions.com and enter code MINDFUL for 20% off. That's tallowskinsolutions.com and use code MINDFUL for 20% off your next order.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Mindful Movement Podcast. I'm your host, Les Raymond. Thank you for joining me today for another episode. Today, I'm speaking with Danny Vong Batimana. Danny is a real energizing, positive spirit. It was a pleasure to connect with him today. He's been doing some very noble work, and I look forward to letting him share his journey with the audience. It's really a touching story through both pain and suffering. Danny has found a way to be a conduit for what gives him joy in life and use that art form of his to inspire young people, children all around the country, to find a more positive outlook in life. So through dance, Danny has found a way to bring out more joy and fulfillment in the young people around the world. And I find that to be really special. I'm really grateful that he took the time to chat with me today. It was a pleasure speaking with him. I hope you enjoy the episode. All right, sitting here with Danny Vong Batimana, AKA Cousin Danny. Danny, thanks for joining the Mindful Movement Podcast today. How are you?
Oh, I'm well. Thank you for having me, Les. I'm just super stoked, a little nervous, but just ready. Means I'm excited.
Great. So you recently worked with Sarah, actually through her like private hypnotherapy service about a month or so ago. And Sarah turned to me and said, hey, I work with somebody today and I think you should talk to him. He's got a great story. He's doing really good work. And, you know, at the Mindful Movement, we try to empower folks to play a bigger role in their sense of well-being. And, you know, that could come in a lot of packages and a lot of different angles. And I thought you touched on some really important ones. The work you do seems just really inspiring. So maybe you could share with the audience who Cousin Danny is. And then maybe we'll dive a little deeper in how you got there and then just see where the conversation goes.
Sure. Yeah. Well, first, thank you for having me. And the hypnotherapy session with Sarah happened because I listened to a lot of podcasts and I was listening to Luke's story, and anything that Luke does, I'm going to do. So I, you know, went through this journey with Sarah and it was incredible. And I was able to unpack a lot of stuff with what I've been going through these past, you know, just my life. Cousin Danny came about, just a couple, maybe about 5 years ago. I'm a youth speaker and happiness creator. So I go around to elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools across the country, primarily in California, Southern California. I live here in Orange County, Irvine, California. And I promote, or I try to spread happiness through my passion, which is dancing. I'm Filipino, so I grew up as a dancer. You're either a dancer, a singer, or you're a nurse, and I am a dancer. So I danced all, you know, ever since I was a child, and we would go to these family parties. Every Saturday, my mom and my dad would take us to these Filipino family parties with all my cousins to eat food, to sing karaoke. And in the backyard, my older cousin taught us how to dance, the dance moves she learned on MTV. And then I would take these moves, I'd practice them, you know, all day Sunday. And then Monday, I'd go bright and early to teach all of my friends for the talent show. And so that was the beginning of me creating dance and having it in part of my life. It made me feel empowered on stage and in school. Fast forward 25 years later, I became a high school teacher. I kind of failed in dance. I was in LA and I kept hearing no's and no's, and you're too short and you're not the right look. And a lot of it wasn't about the talent. And so I just got really discouraged at an early point. And so I said, well, what could I do? My friend said, you could become a high school teacher. And I said, really? Oh, that sounds kind of cool. You get paid, you know, $5,000 a month. I have medical insurance. And then I get all these months off, you know, you get summer break, you got winter break, you got all these holidays, and you got all these made up holidays that are days that the school makes up. So I was like, I'm in. I did that for 8 years. I taught math, and I never really knew how, like, why I was supposed to be a teacher. You know, you have these things that come into your life, and you realize that you'll never find out until, or you won't find out until you look back years later. So I was at a crossroads in my eighth year. I was like, I don't really want to continue teaching. I think I could do it for a long time because I was a really good teacher. I taught KC math, which was to get the 12th graders to pass the high school exit exam. So it was more about motivation than teaching. And it made sense to me. It was like, okay, well, you know, you taught for 8 years, and you tried to figure out what your what makes you happy, and that was dancing. So I combined both passions, and I decided to become a youth speaker. I tell everybody in the assemblies and the presentations that I'm going to become their cousin Danny, and I'm going to teach them dance moves. So nice. Just like how my cousin taught me. So that's a quick story of how I became cousin Danny. Everybody knows me as cousin.
So I have a question. You mentioned MTV. So I grew up on MTV. How old are you? What era of MTV are we talking about?
45.
Okay. We're the same age. Yeah. I turned 45 in a couple of months. Okay. So like back when MTV showed music videos, and it was like everything. I mean, that was like what you put on when you got home from school.
Yeah.
Happiness creator. That's cool. And it's right in your website is happinessisnow.org. When you go on that webpage, you could just see right away, like, you are making a difference in the lives of children. I mean, it's very apparent. And I think back of going to assemblies when I was little, and in some ways, like, assemblies were awesome because it was like a break from the norm. Like, you would get out of class to go to an assembly, but usually, like, it's not like the adults running the show were doing that to make our lives, like, I mean, granted, the teachers always have good intentions, but it's not like it's what the kids necessarily wanted to do. We were just happy to not be in class. But what you're doing is very different, it seems. I mean, you're really pulling kids very far from the norm, you know, of their routine. So you're basically a motivation speaker to children, but you're using dance as like the tool in the toolkit to reach them or to get them to maybe break out of, you know, whatever's the mundane for them and experience life in a different way.
Dancing, you know, I've learned that when you're at a young age, you are open, you are connected to source, to God, to universe, whatever you call it, want to call it, and we are just movers. We are connected, we move, and dancing is movement. And so I thought, you know, I spoke to high schoolers very on in my career, and then middle schoolers, so I was a speaker, you know, bona fide speaker. But then an elementary school called me and said, hey, can you do an assembly for us? And I was like, what would I do? I'm a speaker like Tony Robbins. What would I do? And I thought, you know what? I need the money. I'm going to go. And I went there and I started to dance and teach them these dance moves, and they would follow me. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is kind of cool. And so I remembered, like, when I went to Tony Robbins, Unleash Your Power Within, he would get us doing 15 minutes of singing to the songs and jumping and connecting and dancing. And I was just energized. So I said, all right, let's kind of put that in this presentation. And right off the bat, they connected. And it was about creating that energy, making them feel safe, making them feel like they're playing, you know, and for them to feel that safety and that connection right away. Then I was able to tell them the messaging that the school wanted me, whether it was, you know, stop bullying or don't do drugs or whatever they wanted, you know, state testing. You give me a topic and I can get them to focus on that. But I can only talk about that topic for about 2 minutes and then we go back to the dancing. Yeah, I really didn't understand why they were so connected until I figured out, you know what? It's because you're bringing joy, you're bringing this energy. And once you bring this energy and everybody's connected, you can't stop it. And so I thought, okay, this could be something, because when I was in third grade and we had the DARE officer come in for, you know, don't do drugs, I was definitely scared. You know, I did not do hard drugs as an adult in entertainment. Because the police officer scared me. So I thought, what if I could go into a school and reverse that energy and that psychology and broaden this happiness? What kind of foundation could I provide for that student, for that kid, so that when they grow up, they're like, you know what? I don't remember what this guy's name was or what he said, but I remember he just created this energy and he was just so alive. And I want to do something like that. And so if I could get them early on, you know, as low as TK, the principals are always like, how low can you go with grades? And I'm like, how long can you, 60 minutes, give me 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm one of the very few speakers in the world, maybe the only one that can really hold their attention for 60 minutes and give a message. I do TK, preschool, all the way up to college, high school, 12th grade.
It's fascinating. Like, I've always felt kids are kind of our greatest teachers and there's a lot to learn from them. But mm-hmm. even with like today's culture and the societal norms, like even as a kid, you start to lose the real secrets to life as you conform to what like adults tell you to do. And mm-hmm. you're in their environments for their reasons and they, you know, doing what they think is best for you. But when you look at kids in like the raw form, like before they're really heavily influenced by culture and you mm-hmm. watch what they do, like they hold the secrets to life. I mean, they laugh, they play, they don't care what other people think about them. So they're mm-hmm. fairly inhibited and they sing and they dance. And like, we all mm-hmm. did that when we were little and it was, you know, we didn't have the self-judgments and the, mm-mm. You know, the insecurities that make us like hold back from being childish. Mm-hmm. And as an adult, like I teach movement and I know mm-hmm. kind of the fountain of the youth in the movement world is like, watch what the kid does. They spend a lot of time flopping around on the floor or whatever. And then like we do that as adults and a lot of good things happen. And, mm-hmm. you know, we all have like that childish kid in us that wants to sing and dance, but man, adults just like, we just have a tendency to like trample on this, on you know, that childish activity at a way too young age, to the point where when mm-hmm. you're in high, like my guess, and you could talk about this, like when you're working with a high school student, like there's so many pressures, and maybe middle school too, like they don't feel comfortable doing that in front of their peers like a elementary school kid mm-hmm. would, because somewhere in that time frame in life, like we start to look around and realize people are looking at us and start self-judging and such. I mean, do you see a difference from Absolutely. The different age groups of how receptive they are?
I see it at the age groups. I see it with the demographics. I see it in the states that I go to. Doing this for going on, finishing my 10th year, going on to my 11th, I've learned so much in how to engage people. So what my main job there is to connect them at first. When I come on, I dance, like right away, I dance and they're like, oh, this guy is a dancer, he's kind of cool. And then I tell my story, talk about my mom, and just how funny and crazy she is, you know, being Filipino, Filipino mom, she's kind of loud. And so I get them to laugh and connect with me. And then if I can build an energy and make them feel comfortable in the beginning, then the hard part of vulnerability and teaching them a dance, which really isn't about teaching them dance, it's about how comfortable are they within themselves. It's a gauge, you know. There's going to be kids or students that are going to do it, and there's going to be kids that are definitely not going to do it. And so I have to just be mindful that, you know what, if the person is just standing up and just staring at me, then that's how comfortable they feel. If there's a kid that's like totally dancing, all right, I got him on my side. But it's about changing the energy in the room. If I could change the energy in the room, then I could do anything. I could do anything. And the funny thing is that this presentation is it's for the students, but I was a teacher. I was in the classroom for 8 years. I understand, and especially this pandemic, I don't understand how teachers got through teaching on Zoom. I just can't wrap my head around it, because I joke around that I would teach my math class if I were to teach now. I would teach my math class on Zoom. And then when I would tell people, you know, oh, the end of class, thank you guys for coming, I would cry in the corner. Because there's no connection. I've done presentations where the cameras are off. And so I understand that everybody needs hope and they need to be re-energized. And so I actually bring them up on stage because I want them to model what going through fear looks like. And a lot of them are fearful. Some of them run out of the gym. And I just tell the kids, look, I never force anybody to go up there. But I know that you guys are fearful, that they're up here. The teachers are fearful. They have this feeling in their gut that they're scared. And I just say, you know what? I'm excited, which is the same feeling, because I know what's about to happen. You just got to trust your cousin. Once you trust your cousin and pretend you're in third grade, magic is going to happen. The source is going to enter the room and you're going to tap back into just this love and this positive energy that I use every day. But it takes me, I have to use my energy and I have to get their energy up, because if I don't do that, then it's going to be a long, long day.
So that's interesting. So like you're basically sensing like the general feel of the room and the energy, mm-hmm. and kind of mm-hmm. feeding off that and trying to essentially like raise that collective frequency that everybody's submerged in.
Absolutely. I'm trying to raise the frequency and the energy and get people out of their heads and just get them into the now, the present moment, and connected with me. Follow me. Look at me. Don't look out there. Connect, you know?
Yeah,
and I always say, be a third grader. You're right now, you're in elementary school. What did you do in elementary school?
It's interesting you say get in the present moment. Yeah, I mean, when you're in the process of dancing, I assume, and I don't do a lot of dancing. I'll do a little bit. Like, uh-huh. It sounds funny. This might actually be a little embarrassing, but my daughter, who is basically an adult now, we'll go food shopping together sometimes, and they always have like kind of fun music on. And mm-hmm. for some, we love food. Like our lives, mm-hmm. the food is such a centerpiece of all the things we do. And we'll go food shopping, and we kind of dance to the music in the aisles.
Oh yeah.
Like, I know people look at me like crazy, and there's part of me that's like feels proud, like, yeah, I'm the guy willing to dance with my daughter in a grocery store. Yeah, you got a problem with that? Good. You're just jealous.
It is amazing. I'm the same way. I'll go to Whole Foods, I put my headset, like my AirPods on, I'll put on a song, and I'm actually dancing down the aisles, choreographing. And you know what? I don't even know if people are watching or not, but I know if somebody takes a look, they're like, what is going on there? I'm just enjoying this experience. Like I just, for me, movement is what gets me into flow. Like, just like how people write, you know, gets them into flow, how people sing, get some music, create music. It's like, yeah. What gets you into your flow state, and continue to do that like, every day as much as possible. And my flow state is just moving.
Yeah, you know, I think of flow state, I just think of that intense sense of being present. And, you know, we talk about meditation a lot in this channel, and mm-hmm. all it really is, you know, it's a task, you know, it's a practice that allows that sense of presence to emerge essentially by focusing on your breath. But there's all these other activities, and I guess dancing is one of them, that it's really hard to be somewhere else and there at the same time. So like, you know, it could be surfing, it could be chopping wood, or, you know, anything that like your attention needs to be on the thing that you're, the task you're doing right now in that moment. And it's real hard to be in your head, like depressed about something that's happened in the past or worrying or anxious about something that might be around the corner at the same time. It's like a, it's like a portal to right now where there's generally no real problem. Like if you're, I mean, there might be exceptions, but if you're really focused on being here right now, there's usually not any problems in this moment, this very moment. And obviously, you know, and there are extreme cases where that might not play, but in general, so any, and there's any tool that could get you to tap into that is just fantastic. And luckily, you know, there's a lot of tools we have to choose from, but there's something about dancing. Like, and I know as an adult, it's, you know, I would guess that most adults never dance, you know, but it's something that all those guys or girls that never dance now, there was a time where they wouldn't have thought twice. Like you never see a 2-year-old where a song comes on that's like unwilling. So somewhere, somewhere along the way, we just lose that. So what kind of feedback do you get from the kids themselves? Like, do they come, I assume you get approached after the fact sometimes with stories or whatever of what it's done for them.
Gosh.
Are there any that like stand out?
Yes. So I think when you see the website and you talk to me, you're thinking happiness, positivity, but the kids, I'm going to go to the kids, but I'm going to go to what I recently found out why I'm doing this work. So my father, before the pandemic, 1 year before, 2019, January, was murdered by his roommate in our house that we bought. And my dad ran a halfway house because he had nobody else to live there. So, and he always wanted to help people. He went to prison for about 5 years and was a really horrible man before. He's like mean, abusive. Prison changed him. I don't know how he survived, to be honest with you. He's only 5 foot, like 4'11", but he has a big personality. And I knew he found God because I felt like, I found like pictures of Jesus in the Bible in his room when I was cleaning it out. So I knew he'd become a better man. So after he passed away, that's when my spiritual journey began. You know, I tried to connect back with him. So I would do like psychedelics. I went to Rhythmia to do ayahuasca and to learn how to meditate with Joe Dispenza. I just tried everything to connect. And it's just been such a beautiful journey because now I'm connected to the source that's always watching me, that's always in me, guiding me. And all I have to do is trust it. So what I found out in a recent journey, I'm not going to say what the type of journey, that the reason why I do my work is it's really simple. Like you said, life, children are simple. Life is pretty simple if you really listen. My purpose and why I do these presentations for the kids is because I am trying to heal trauma that I had when I was a child. I was in the closet. I was a gay kid that in the 90s and trying to navigate through that and didn't tell anybody and felt unworthy and unhappy and just not feel good about myself. And so I think right now gives me a chance for my inner child to play and feel and dance and open. And I'm 45 and I just feel like so free and connected with them. And I think when I'm on stage, I get back to like, oh, here's, you know, 12-year-old Danny back living the childhood that he always wanted, or in elementary school he played, but did he really play? And I just want, in on the outside, I just want to make sure that, you know, that the kids understand that there's going to be stuff that happens in their lives. We just have these journeys. It's called the darkness, and for you to go through this hard time, especially the pandemic, there is a light at the end of the road. There's a light there that I picture, that I try to describe for them. Like, it's not, you can't see it, you could just feel it. Some of us feel it, some of us see it, but there is a light there. And once you can get through all this darkness, man, the love on the other side is so immense. There are times I'm on stage and I'm just crying, and the kid's like, well, don't cry, don't be sad. I'm like, you know what? I'm crying because I'm just so grateful and I'm so happy. I just don't know what to do with this love. I just don't know what to do. I'm just so happy. I don't know what energy is here. The kids, you know, when they're older, and I check the demographics, middle school, high school, they've lost people. And so I do this solo dance, unchoreographed, to Teen Heaven. And I tell them that this is dedicated to our angels that are protecting us. If you lost somebody, if you're going through something. And I always think of my brother-in-law who recently passed, and my dad, and I do this beautiful dance where I'm connected to them. And it's not beautiful, Les. It is, it is, I watched it. It is not, parts of it is, but if you look at it, it's me releasing trauma, connecting, flowing, getting the energy in the room. I don't know what it is, but at that point I'm taken over by the source or this energy. And then when I wake up from this dream, I look out and I'm like, wow, I don't know what happened there, but I know that I'm gonna get some direct messages, emails. There's people crying, there's a line waiting to talk to me. Teachers are crying. It turned from happiness into grief all in a second. And from that point, I just let them know that, you know, life and happiness is just a part of the feelings that you're going to go, that you feel. This journey has to have our ups and downs. And once we understand why we go through these hardships, once we understand that the only way through them is to really feel them and go through them. And once we can do that, you're going to understand. But you're just going to have to trust. You will understand. You'll look back. You're like, oh, that's why I had to go through all of that. Because the stuff that's planned for you, I truly believe it's planned for you, you won't receive it until you're ready. And so I believe I'm in a time where I'm working through a lot of stuff. And I think that, you know, Sarah, during the therapy, I was able to connect so fast because I truly am doing work on myself every day and seeing how I could make my life better, but not my life better, but how could I contribute back and make those kids, these kids right now in the schools, I could feel it. They're so depressed and disconnected. And I get messages all the time that, thank you for coming. I wasn't going to come here because I tried to commit suicide 3 days ago. And this kid, Toby from Texas, he shared a story with me about his stepdad abusing him. He tried to commit suicide 5 times. And I met him in Texas. And after he saw the presentation, he changed. And I said, what? What do you mean? I don't know. I just kind of changed. And so I'm coming out with a podcast called Becoming Cousin Danny. And Toby's my first guest. Youth people sharing their stories of, they're just sharing their stories.
Oh, and nice. So you're going to be hosting the kids that go to your events.
Yes,
them to share the impact on them. That's a great idea.
Just like sharing stories, because I feel like they just, other kids, they first of all, they want to share stories. They want to share what they're going through, but they also want other people to know that they're not alone. And I think that's the biggest point of why this is going out, because I really don't want people to feel that they're alone and that there is somebody that is going through something similar, if not the same. It's very similar. Everybody's experiences are similar, but there's somebody out there that knows what you're going through. So I'm really excited. I'm really frightened. But
well, that's so powerful, man. That's outstanding, man. You are definitely making the world a better place, sounds like. So rewind a little bit. You said that So when you're on stage, you think you're actually like kind of tapping into what you need and you're kind of working through your own trauma. And then I guess that energy is radiating off and the kids are kind of probably watching you do that and feeling something internally going on as they watch what that's like. I mean, is that what you're implying? Like you're on there going through what you actually need, like it's your medicine?
Look, I'm on stage and I used to have an agenda. You know, you're on stage, you do this joke, you tell this story, you do that. It used to be planned. It's not anymore. I'm mindful of there's an intuition or a voice that's telling me, do this. This is what they need. Okay.
And you're the sure that's not just residual ayahuasca lingering.
You know what? It might be Mother Aya because I'm connected to her. She's in me. And I know my dad's here. Like the energy in there, the angels, they're just telling me, go for it. And when I hear take your shoes off, I'm like, really? And sometimes it's in elementary school. Take your shoes off means do the Tears in Heaven dance. That dance is so powerful. And I'm like, really, in elementary school, you want me to do the Tears in Heaven dance? All right. And I just go with it. And I recently did it and half the assembly was crying. And I was like, oh my gosh, I felt so horrible. Like, what did I just do? This principal secretary is coming up like, we need to get this man to stop talking, you know? I'm like, oh my gosh, what happened? She didn't attend the assembly. I had this group after, there's 30 kids. They were supporting each other, hugging each other. They were crying. Somebody lost their dog 3 years ago. Somebody lost their parent last year. Somebody lost 4 family members. And it was just, I look around, I said, look, how many of you guys feel alone? All of them raised their hand. I said, look around, you're not, this is your tribe. This is your tribe. And this is like, these were 6th graders, 5th graders. And the teachers afterward had my back. They said, this is the most beautiful thing we've ever experienced. And we're going to go ahead and go back to our classrooms and really talk about this. You know, we're a family in our classroom, so we have no problem talking about this. Made me feel better. But again, it went back to my, you know, my childhood trauma where I was hiding and I was like, you know, somebody's attacking me. Oh, no. So I have to work through that with Sarah next week. I got attacked. But yes,
well, I'm working trauma. That's good to hear that you connected with Sarah well. She makes it easy. Sarah's a special lady. I'm a little biased, but she's a special lady.
She's special. I'm talking to Toby to see when he turns 18 if he, you know, if I could have him do a session with Sarah and see what happens, because he has not gotten therapy for any of the sexual abuse that he was, or any of the trauma that he's been through. So I was like, okay, I think let's connect you. Let's see what happened.
What led you to go do the an ayahuasca journey? Was that to try to connect with your father? You said that was after your father's passing. Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is the divine story. I was at a rave, 2018 at a rave, here in Pomona, California. The Chainsmokers, you know, EDM music was on stage. I was in the front, and all of a sudden, I don't know who told me to go down and meditate or pray. So I got on my knees and started to pray or meditate. And this girl next to me asked my husband, hey, is he okay? Is your husband, is that guy okay? And my husband was like, oh no, he's just meditating. He's fine, because he knows. What was given in that meditation or in that prayer was, you need to move your trip to Rhythmia from March to now, like tomorrow. You need a call tomorrow, you need to move it. So I went in January 2019 through my 7-day retreat to connect with my dad and figure out what all this was. And then 2 months later, March 2019, as we all know, was it 2019? No, 2020, as we all know, lockdown.
So you would have missed it, basically.
Oh yeah, I would have missed it.
Mm-hmm. Are you comfortable? I'm always curious about those types of journeys. Like,
yep.
I definitely am fascinated by like what a plant can do as a medicine. Sure. Can you explore that experience a little bit?
Yeah. Rhythmia, I was listening to Dave Asprey, his podcast, and he was interviewing Gerard Powell, who created Rythmia, and he was telling about his story. And I was like, I always look for signs, like, oh, it's a sign that I need to go. So I booked it, and it's 7 days, a retreat. It was like 100 people, and 4 days, 4 days straight, you do full doses of ayahuasca with shamans.
Why 4 days straight? Is there a process that's necessary that requires that? Or
There's different medicines that they choose to use and different shamans. Some, like, one day was more feminine energy, one day was more masculine. There's a mixture of different plant medicines. So they just try different things, because some of us go in there and we don't really get our experience until the last day, you know? So we have to keep doing these experiences. The first 2 days, it was beautiful. It was fine. It was like, oh, I felt love. It was great. But it wasn't earth shattering. Like I didn't get what I was looking for. And I think this is because I was really controlling. Like, I wanted to control the outcome. The third night I said, you know what? You spend so much money. You're here. You need to just go. Let go. Trust. Do it. So the third one, I remember I woke up. It was like, it turned into like this. Oh my gosh, I don't want to. Okay, I'm just going to say it turned into like this spaceship. It was like the same room, but it was different. Like, it was, everybody was like gray. And I felt like I was a puppet. Like, somebody was controlling my body. So every time I would hear music, they were like controlling my body. I was like, okay. And so the music was playing, and I was like, kind of like dancing around. And every time I wasn't moving my body, something was. I could stop it, but I was like, you know what, just go with it. At some point I got really upset, like, are you using me just for your entertainment? And I said, I'm here to learn who I am. Please tell me who I am. And that's the question that you're supposed to ask at that retreat. Tell me who I am. And then this beautiful song comes on, and Mother Aya enters my spirit, my body, and takes over. And I do this most beautiful contemporary, I'm not a contemporary dancer, modern dance in front of everybody. And I connected, and she just showed me that I was love, and that I am beautiful, and that I matter. And so I danced with her for 2 hours. She would take me outside. I'd ask her questions like, where's my father? She would go outside. She would spin me around in a circle. I would get dizzy. I'm like, I'm getting dizzy. And she's like, because you're not listening to me. I'm like, okay, sorry. So she would take me outside, point up to the stars. Your father's right there. He's okay. I said, all right. And then she took me to the fire, and she said, all the things that are burdening you, let's go ahead and throw that in the fire and burn it. I went back inside. I continued to dance with her. And it was the most beautiful thing, because I remember every moment of that night. I was connected to the most intense love. I was reconnected to my purpose of using my dancing ability to share my love. And I'm looking forward for her to come back again. She came back another time when I did a psilocybin journey. And I was like, you're back. But I haven't experienced her, but I get glimpses of it on stage when I'm dancing. I can remember, like, okay, just let go. Stop thinking about it too much. Just do what she taught you. And so, yeah, that was the first part. I was able to resolve it wasn't even about my father. I didn't even resolve the fact that he was murdered. It was, all of it was self-love.
Oh, so no, like, altering of your relationship with him. Because I have heard not people really talk about, like, that it's a tool to connect with those that have, you know, passed from this physical realm that we spend our time in. And sure. But no, So mm-hmm. even though you were you thinking of that going into and it just didn't show up? Yeah, that's interesting.
Yes, yes. Looking back at it, it was like, yeah, that wasn't my problem. My problem gotcha. At that point was the self-love and just kind of like the worthiness. Right. I just didn't feel good about myself. And so I had to work on that first until we were to work on that.
Nice. Yeah. That stuff, I'm very interested in the plant medicines, but the ayahuasca mm-hmm. thing, it definitely terrifies me. Partly too, yeah. is like, you always got to travel far and like being far from home. Like, I know, like, if I'm even on a vacation, but it's, like, somewhat remote and they're, like, the closest uh-huh. hospital is an hour away, there's always, uh-huh. like, a little bit of fear in the back of my mind. Like, don't do something stupid where you need to go to the hospital because you're not 10 minutes away, like, at home. Like, so, like, when I think about, people taking trips to Peru for that or whatever, it's like, man, it seems like you're a ways away from getting potential support. It always freaks me out a little bit.
They have medical staff there.
It's a medical staff. Gotcha.
Well, yeah, that's a.
There's 100 people. So there's 100 people doing that at the same time together. Wow, that's got to be an interesting energy. So what about when folks are like, where some of those folks, I assume it doesn't go well. That's got to be somewhat distracting or.
Okay, so everybody has their own journey. They tell us if you see somebody struggling, do not engage. Because you just don't know what they're going through. So some people are going through traumatic events. They like relive maybe a birth where their umbilical cord is wrapped around their neck, or trauma, physical abuse. Everybody's going through something different, but you just don't know what that is. And even if somebody's like looks like they're unusually overactive and running around, it's not your job to do anything. It's the shaman's job to go and make sure that they're okay. But you just don't know, because when we do our group share, that same person will be like, oh, it was so beautiful. I'm like, really? Because you were acting a little nutsos over there. That's and I think people are scared of the purging, like that you're supposed to like, throw up, or that's a purge. You know, people are like, I don't want to do that. My purging was crying and laughing, crying. I cried a lot. Yeah.
I've had a purge that seemed to be out the eyes. Yeah. It was almost like projectile crying. I mean, and it was very strange. And it was also I was on a camping trip by myself. Uh-huh. And, took a little too much of like a cannabis concentrate, something that I'm used to in like very low doses. Mm-hmm. And I think I like subconsciously took more because I knew I needed something, but it was like, it was like very out of character for me. Like I'm pretty calibrated, like measured with those things. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I went way against my normal routine. And it was as if something inside knew it needed to get out, and it just made me take more. And a couple hours later when it hit, I remember went through a very intense experience, and there I was very scared. And eventually I was like, all right, what are you here to teach me? And I kind of gave up, gave in. Mm-hmm. And but that was a part of it. It was like I wasn't actively crying, but tears were coming out in a very active way. It was very strange. I'd never experienced it, but it led to a lot of really beautiful things, like very profound experience for me. And some of the most, important few hours of my adult life in terms of like working through personal shit and trauma. And it's pretty wild what a plant can offer you.
And the U.S. is doing, they're in stage 3 trials right now, the FDA, with psilocybin and ketamine, and what this will do for people. I think it's incredible. You know it has the stigma, but ketamine is already approved. I think it's psilocybin and MDMA with trauma, because I felt like in Rhythmia, 20 years of therapy in 7 days.
It's amazing.
Instantaneous. I came back, was hugging trees, like calling my mom, like usually I have these triggers when she calls or I hear her voice. It's like, oh, it's her again. And now it's all changed. Perspective has changed. You know, I used to do therapy, and therapy is about talking. But if you don't experience that, you could talk all day. In my opinion, for me, I need to experience something to change me. I need my subconscious to change. I need my body to change. And you were talking about how you're rigid, or you have your ways, and if you go out of those norms, then it's like, uh-oh, what's going to happen? Well, that's what needs to happen if we want to feel or get what we want. We have to let go. We have to trust and let go and just let the universe or source do its thing.
Yeah, well, stuff. It makes me wonder. I feel like, I mean, this is silly, but I just wonder if there was like a requirement. If you want to run for political office, you had to do a certain dose first.
Oh my gosh.
Like, what does that look like after a few decades? Like, how does that change the landscape of humanity?
Oh, I hear a lot on podcasts. They're like, everybody just needs to take, you know, psilocybin or magic mushrooms and we'll all be fine.
Maybe not everybody. if your ego plays such a role that you are driven to like a political, power, like a position of power, and you're going to have influence on a lot of other people, something that forces you to have some kind of sense of your connection to those people in a different way than your ego has been telling you up until that point, to give, just to force a different perspective. Because that's one thing that happens. Like, I've noticed that your perspective of whatever is, as you experience it, is just different. Like, you're getting a second opinion about something.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we get very, we're habitual creatures. We get very locked into, just like we have the same habits of what how we spend our time. We also have our habits of like how we think about certain things. Mm-hmm. So it's very easy to think about something that, maybe it's a legal thing that impacts how other people, and we always think about it the same way. And if we hear a different voice arise from someone else, we're guarded, and you know, we have our barriers up and we poo-poo it and shut it down and look for reasons to that why we're right. But there's something about a plant that could just kind of shatter that, and you can see a different perspective and associate like a different sense with it, where you don't have your barriers up. You're not just in this autopilot of shutting down anything that's different than what you've been. It's like you're open-minded, and that leads to maybe a different sense of empathy or compassion, or what if, you know, what is it like for these other people? I've been thinking this one way for so long. I don't know, just a thought experiment. I mean, will never happen probably, but it's just curious thought.
Can I add one thing about ayahuasca? Another thing that happened was, and I didn't go in there to resolve this. I drank heavily after my dad's passing for, you know, every day. I would have this bottle of Absolute Mandarin. I would go to CVS, have one in the freezer, have one in my trunk of my car. And anytime I felt anxious, boom, Absolute, you know.
How much are we talking about? You're talking to a former drinker.
I would say probably that bottle. Maybe I would go there every other day. Yeah. So it was like just straight. I didn't drink any, like, I didn't make a drink. I just, you know, just do the bottle. So after my ayahuasca, I stopped. I'm a non-drinker. I've been on vacation. My first vacation I came back from was Miami. And I was like, oh my gosh. Am I going to drink? Didn't happen.
Party town. Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't happen. I saw my friends drink and they're like, are you going to drink? I'm like, no, I'm going to just hang. I'm going to hang out. And I was fine.
You're talking almost 3 years or.
I can't believe. Yeah. I can't believe that I'm a non-drinker. Like it comes. I see it. Sometimes I feel the trigger, like, oh, drink. And I'm like, no, And I just kind of laugh, like, that's ridiculous. But now my, I think that that addiction is now to Twizzlers. So I might have to, like, I'm like, where's my Twizzlers at?
That's funny.
It just changed. It changed.
Yeah, we're all we are all addicts. It's just to what, you know, some habits are way healthier.
Yeah, but
we're like, the brain is so addicted to feeling whatever chemical makeup it's used to. So like, if you're a runner and when you run, you're changing your chemical composition and it feels a certain way. If you tell someone that runs like 5-6 days a week that they can't because of an injury, like, they get angry. Like, you're talking about taking away someone's drugs. So like, we're all addicts. Yeah, it's interesting. I know that craving. So I was a drinker for like 23 years daily. Uh-huh. And there's times, and I guess, what is today? I'm coming up on, I might have just passed 7 years, actually. 6 years.
Oh, wow. Oh,
didn't even notice that the day came. Yeah. Leap day, February 29th would have been, I guess, 6 years. So, but there's times where somebody will pour something, especially if it's something that, like, you know, I used to really treasure palate wise, whether it's like a good whiskey or cognac or red wine, and I'll get a craving and it's so intense, but it's like 20 or 30 seconds. And then it like washes over where it's like, I'm for a moment, I'm like right back to that moment where like you're feeling what it's like when you're taking that first sip, like my favorite sip of the day, that first sip and like the 30 to 60, 90 seconds afterwards where it's like your friend is with you, you know, your companion is here and it's a warm sensation. I didn't know when I was drinking why I was drinking and what I was soothing. You know, you don't really, you don't see that stuff till you stop. But it's interesting how like we can be triggered through just seeing someone pour a glass. And like in that moment, your body feels completely different than, you know, the moment before you saw that. But, you know, a couple breaths, like acknowledge like, oh, this is just, you know, the wave of that crave. And then the wave passes. It's wild. Yeah. That's great. So you quit drinking and it was, I guess, really sudden. And you didn't go into it with that expectation. You didn't go into that, you know, hoping for that or.
I didn't, I wasn't looking for that. It was in the back of my mind, like, oh, maybe I should stop drinking. But every time I think about it, I'm like, oh man, but you feel so awful. Why do you want to feel that way the next day? You have stuff to do. Let's do it. Don't do it.
Right. You know? So what do you notice from quitting drinking? Like anything positive physically or mentally, emotionally?
Well, I thought that I was more fun. I thought I was life of the party. And I asked my husband, like, am I more fun when I drink? And he goes, no, you're more obnoxious, actually. You're actually out of control. And then I would ask my friends when I'm not drinking, like, hey, am I the same when I was, you know, before when I was drinking and now? They're like, you're absolutely the same. You're still a little nuts, you know? So that really, it wasn't that it made me more social. It just calmed the nerves down. You know, it just shut off any emotions or feelings that I was going through. But in terms of personality, no, I mean, I'm much nicer now. I, the ego doesn't get to play. It loves, you know, loves to be released, but we find other ways. We've made a deal to find other ways to, for us to cooperate together and play in ways that's going to be more fun. Like we do other things together.
So you basically dance for a living and rely on like your body.
And, oh gosh, yes.
You know, I'm always, I'm also, another interest of mine is like, you know, how we interact with the meat suit that we spend, you know, our time in and how adaptable it is. And I'm always intrigued by when people have a, I guess, when they really rely on the physical body to be there for them, whether it's for a sport or hobby or, you know, profession, what are the, some of the things they do? Like, do you have a protocol or like a lifestyle that's really driven to support that? So that, cause I'm assuming like getting up and dancing for an hour, it's not something I do. I dance for a few seconds in the grocery store aisle kind of thing, but like that, I would assume that's very physically demanding. What are the, some of the things that you do to take care of yourself?
God. Yeah, I kind of neglected this body for a long time. And then this year, stuff has come about, like just knee issues, not anything broken or torn, but there's just, it takes the body, my body, about 30 minutes to an hour just to warm up. And when the principals are like, oh, do you want to have like a break? I'm like, no, let's go directly into the second one. Because if I stop, my body's going to be like, okay, then we're going to shut down. So I can generate a lot of force, but once it's done, then it's done. I can't go back to it. I have to do recovery time. And so I'm a biohacker. So I'll do, and there's a lot. I'll get massages once in a while to kind of figure. I have a PT. I intermittent fast. I do peptides.
What kind of peptides? For the listeners, we don't really talk. I kind of dibble into some biohacking stuff too. I don't think I've ever really discussed peptides. For the listeners, peptides are basically strings of amino acids. So if you think of when you eat a protein, it's made of a collection of amino acids, and like smaller than a whole protein, but bigger than an amino acid will be a collection of amino acids that are called a peptide. And they could be used as a supplement or a medicine, either, you know, injected or taken orally, depending upon, or even I think intranasally sometimes. Mm-hmm. What peptides do you rely on?
For healing, BPC 157.
Okay.
TP 500. Those are the healing ones for my gut and just any ligaments or muscles.
And do you take those orally or do you inject them?
Subcutaneous. Subcutaneous.
So you say for recovery. So do you time that around certain things or is it like just part of a daily routine?
It's a daily routine that I do, and it'll change. If I'm sick, then I'll switch it to, forgot the name of the peptide, but there's another peptide that will go directly for the immune system.
It would be thymosin alpha one.
Yes, yep. Thymosin alpha one is one that I would use.
I played with some of those when I was recovering from Lyme disease, and I was kind of trying everything to see what works. It was interesting. I didn't like putting a shot in my belly every day. I'm glad I'm past that, but it's interesting though. I mean, it was interesting. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's an interesting concept of peptide. It's like your body makes these things and they have an action. There's like an action potential in them. And you're just kind of giving your body a little extra support in that direction. I think I'm interested to see how that develops and goes more mainstream over the next decade or so. I think it could really probably improve a lot of people's lives. So you take, you take some peptides.
You get
body work and PT. Do you hit the gym? Does it take like a certain amount of lifting?
Gym. Yes. So strength training, I don't squat anymore. My PT was like, why, you don't need to squat, you know, like the heavy barbell, like your back, like you got to protect that. So he's like, you don't need to do that anymore. So I do strength training. And if I do like squats, it'll just be like, you know, maybe the bar, maybe a couple of weights. But the thing that changed my life, and for all you listening out there, try this out. And then when I tell you, just don't be like, that's not for me. I thought the same. The thing that changed my physical strength, my core, Pilates, the reformer machine. That machine was created to rehabilitate soldiers when they were injured in the war. This machine and getting the right person to teach you how to use it has got my core so strong. I did a DEXA scan, an x-ray that showed where the muscle was. I gained 3.5 pounds of muscle in my core in a month from this machine and peptides, but yes, from that machine. But that, I was like, I'm a dancer and I never knew like flexibility. I'm not really that flexible, but that machine got me flexible, got me strong in my core. My lower back is no longer there because I've gotten my core stronger. And so that, along with I did a couple of therapies of stem cell therapy in IVs, and I'm just trying that out. And then the way that I make those work is I listen to a Joe Dispenza meditation, and we focus on where do you want these stem cells to like work. I'm like, my knees, go to my knees, or help me with my sleep. And if you can, when you go into the subconscious like that and you meditate, you're talking to, you're going into the operating system. You can teach your body to do whatever you want it to do. You just got to go know how to do it.
Yeah, body's a powerful thing. You know, it's like the whole placebo effect. You know, in modern medicine, they always try to rule it out. And it's like, that's the wrong question. Like, we should be grateful that it's there. How do we, how do we use it? How do we guide this a little bit more? Mm-hmm. We know it's real because they have to account for it. Mm-hmm. So it raises the question of, like, can we have a greater say in how that works? And
absolutely. You
know, I don't doubt that, you know, listening to Joe Dispenza and using some of those tactics could have an impact. You know, you're like, why not? You know, why not? Mm-hmm. That's great. So your main client base are schools, like elementary schools, middle schools, maybe some high schools. Anything mm-hmm. else? Do you do this like on a corporate level for companies for morale boosts or team building or anything like that? Or
I'm scared of adults. I was in high school when I was a high school teacher, my second year, I became the department chair for the math department. That was
good fit for you.
No. Those ladies hated me. I just wanted to make sure everything, I wanted my materials. I just wanted my pens to be ordered and my folders. Like, I wasn't trying to attack anybody. I just wanted the system to become more efficient. So that's why I ran. It was hard. So I think that was a little traumatic, the working with adults. I'm going to say I don't do that, but you mentioning it, I would love to. I think I could. I'm actually doing a district-wide first day meeting at the Walnut Valley Unified School District, which is my old school district, 2,000 employees, including the superintendent, everybody, business services, all the teachers, all the aides, everybody, first day in a church. And they hired me for 10 minutes to do my thing and uplift. Nice. Yeah.
You said your old school district, the school district you taught in, or the school district went to as a student, as a kid?
I went to as a student.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you go to your home court. That's cool.
Home court. They said in the church at 2,000 people. I said, okay, let's do it. So
that sounds terrifying.
I know I could do it with adults. Maybe in the future things will come my way, but I don't promote or I don't plan this anymore. I used to like promote and do, you know, hire me here. I don't do that anymore. I don't need to. It finds me. The universe, the source, God, it just hands me stuff. Like,
and you travel if you travel for it. So if there's people that work in schools that are listening that are interested, you do. Okay. Yeah. What's the farthest you've traveled for an event?
So recently I just came back from the Texas student conference. There was 4,000 students.
Oh wow.
This is the largest in the nation, the student leaders. Did New Mexico, Missouri recently, up into Canada, Kelowna, New Jersey. But my friends who are speakers, they travel to all the states. And I used to get a little jealous. And I used to be really jealous actually about that. Because I'm like, I'm just as good as them. But what I've learned is that I'm just not needed there right now. I'm needed where I'm needed. Right now I'm needed in these elementary schools because I don't think any of my friends could do these elementary schools.
It does seem like a niche, and it seems like that has got to be a unique skill set to be able to get a crowd of kids. And you know, you bring up this point of like this last couple of years, like I don't think adults can really understand and may never will like what this experience is like for these kids, where like the one thing that I always get hung up on is the whole covering of the faces while kids are developing and learning how to, you know, engage socially and bump up against other kids. And there's so much information. I remember listening to a book. Mm-hmm. I think it was one of Malcolm Gladwell's books. And I think he was talking about, I might be botching this, but it was maybe like an FBI agent who was like a human lie detector. And he was talking about all the muscles of the face and all the, and you know, all these involuntary actions. And they would use it to like, see if somebody was, you know, telling the truth or something. You know, if this muscle goes this direction, it's like a tell kind of thing. And it makes me wonder how much we're communicating with each other that we really have no idea it's going on, but it's probably really important communication that we've been doing for a long, long time. And like, what is it like for all these kids that don't gather that information? It makes me feel like it's a crime against humanity. Like one day we're gonna look back on this and the adults gonna be like, what did we do to these kids over this? Like, this doesn't make sense. Scientifically, it doesn't seem to make that much sense. And it's like, what are the long-term impacts and can we ever recover from that? It freaks me out. It kind of makes me feel like ashamed to be a part of the, you know, the system that is the collection of adults roaming this earth that think we know what's best or whatever. But when really the kids know what's best.
My worst performance to date was when I had to wear, I was outside and I had to perform with a mask on. I couldn't do it. I couldn't connect. I tried my best and I had it on and they just, nothing. That was the day that I said, I'm gonna wear either a clear mask or I'm not doing it. Because you can't connect with me if you can't see my face. You know, the kids are resilient too. I know that, you know, that it'll do some damage, but I know my nephew and what I've noticed is that you could put 5 masks on him. He'll just play around. I think he'll be fine. I think it's maybe with the older ones, like the ones that are transitioning from elementary to middle school. Oh Lord, those are the ones that I'm like worried about, because that's the hardest part. You know, when you transition to middle school, it's terrifying. And not to have these social skills, that's where the teachers are having problems, are in those grades.
Not to mention, socially. there's enough to be like scared about as a kid, you know. We're adding to that. I don't know. Yeah. It's sad. Sad. So I gotta say, Danny, cousin Danny, this is it's great to know that there's people like you out there, man. It's, you know. When you see the images of rooms full of young children being inspired and being childlike and being taught, you know, that's a good thing. It's it's really important, and I'm really honored to be a conduit for your message and help you get it out there. And
thank you.
You know, I wish you the greatest success with this journey. And for those that want to learn more, other than happinessisnow.org, is there any other place that they should look to find you?
Yeah, my Instagram is Cousin Danny Live, and I'm Cousin Danny Live. I'm writing my book, Becoming Cousin Danny, and at the same time, the podcast. So it's like everything's coming all at once.
When does the podcast launch?
My birthday, June 30th.
Okay, and it's called Becoming Cousin Danny?
Cousin Danny, yeah, Becoming Cousin Danny. Yeah, and so we'll see where this journey takes me.
Great, but, and hey, if you're ever out doing one of your events in the Maryland area, then touch base, and maybe we'll do a follow-up in person, in the in-person studio. Yeah. And but I really appreciate it. I'm grateful for what you're doing, man, and thank you for taking the time today. Anything else you'd like to share with the audience?
I just want to just say thank you to you, Les, and Sarah, for the work that you do. I don't know how we got connected. I think about this, like how this happened, but it's just beautiful. And we were supposed to meet, and I'm just so grateful. And for those of you that are listening, I hope you all have a great, wonderful day ahead, and just keep moving forward. Just keep doing you. Just keep doing you. See how you can contribute to the goodness of the world.
Nice. Thanks, Danny. And for the listeners out there, appreciate you listening. And also, hope you all have a great day. Thanks again for listening in today. I hope you found value in that conversation. I know I did. If you're enjoying these episodes, please leave some feedback on your podcast player of choice. It is much appreciated. And if you have any questions about how to contact Danny or anything that was discussed today, send him my way or reach out to him directly. We'll do our best to get back to you. If you think you know someone that might benefit from this video, then please share it. And again, always grateful for your listening and look forward to another one.